Bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, jiao weevi va kat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan, from the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget Pharmaceutical Hill Vivisection Prison Kilitary Industrial Corporation. In the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food-borne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. For 14 years now, disguised as a mild-mannered food show, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, in reality, not egomaniacally, I say, this is the most important program in the history of planet Earth, because it seems like the only one willing to save planet Earth, with a dose of the truth here, for the deniers, for the climate deniers, the disease deniers, the world hunger deniers, whatever. So, globally warm enough for you? Well, then you must go vegan and stop all this meat, dairy, fish, and egg consumption-induced climate change. That's the first dose of the truth that we get here. I know it's an inconvenient truth because, you know, your taste buds are revolting. And your taste buds are revolting, actually, if you're eating meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. But there's your first dose of the truth. Climate change is basically caused by your consumption of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. So, you know, the first quarter of 2015 was the hottest first quarter ever recorded. You believe that? This was the hottest March ever recorded worldwide, averaging 1.53 degrees Fahrenheit. Oh, I love it when they talk my language and, you know, not Celsius or grams or kilograms or whatever, huh? That I can relate to. Okay, so, March was averaging worldwide 1.53 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. This, according to figures released by NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, aptly called NOAA, considering if things keep going as they're going, we are going to need an ark to paddle through the melted glacier water. If things do keep going as they're going, with the hottest first quarter ever, 2015 is on track to be the hottest year ever recorded, dethroning runner-up 2014. Yes, 2014, the hottest year ever recorded. But watch out, 2015 is bubbling up. Fibbin, Bill McKibben fiddles while Earth Burns, 350.org, the Sierra Club, Greenpeace, all fiddle while Earth burns, you know. So get out your violin and play a whining song about divestiture. Divest, please, divest. Now, that sounds good, right? But to really face the music, the fight is against fossil foods, not fossil fuels. Animal agriculture is responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions, according to World Bank climate specialists. And According to those same specialists, we need a 50 to 85% population shift from so-called livestock products to vegan by 2017. But then, of course, they know that humans being what humans are, they say, well, it should happen by 2017, but 2020 the latest, or 1,700 U.S. cities face submersion in the not-too-distant future. So, you know, will any of this be discussed? Will this be the main subject? Will it even be mentioned at the so-called Animal Rights Conference coming up, the ARCon, huh? You know, the only way to save the world is a population shift to veganism. And do we use that as our ammunition as animal advocates? No, we hear about, we need family farms, you know, that's the nonsense you get from the meat industry in the form of the Humane Society of the United States and, you know, its sustainable agriculture propaganda scam, you know, as deceptive as its humane meat scam, you know, according to NOAA, again, NOAA researchers. For the first time in human history, there was a month where global carbon dioxide emissions exceeded 400 parts per million, and that was this past March. So here we are in California, drought-stricken, climate-ravaged California, and it makes you wonder, you know, what will the future be if we continue to eat meat, dairy, fish, and eggs, the main cause of climate change, animal agriculture, at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. Well, let's take a look at a study from Risky Business, which had a lot of money for the study because people like the former mayor of New York City, Bloomberg, with all the money in the world, finance this, and they're claiming it is science. And you know, if business finances something, they usually downplay it a little bit. But I don't think it's really downplayed in this report from Risky Business. Just looking at California, where I reside, the most populous state in the U.S. and the world's eighth, soon to be seventh largest economy. So Risky Business gives us an overview. It says it's also a microcosm of the nation's diverse economy and geography with a wealth of natural resources. California leads the U.S. in agriculture, manufacturing, and tourism, and is a major international exporter. From high tech to Hollywood, California is a hub of innovation that supports cutting-edge industries and leading multinational companies. For decades, the state has led the way on new economic growth models, new technologies, and creative solutions to policy challenges. Today, California faces a new set of challenges and opportunities in the form of climate change. The state's vast and varied topography, from the Redwood Coast to the fertile Central Valley and from the Mojave Desert to the Sierra Nevadas, provides a glimpse into the significant and varied risks the state faces if we stay on our current climate course. Now, what keeps us on the current climate course? If you've listened to this show at all over the last 14 years or over the past 14 minutes, the number one cause of climate change, the number one cause of human-induced greenhouse gas emissions would be your appetite for meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. And you can change that today. We better change it like today, like yesterday. It says here, all along the coast, rising sea levels will likely put billions of dollars of property and infrastructure at risk. Further inland, increasingly warm and dry conditions threaten the productivity of one of the richest agricultural regions in the world. Eastern California, a haven for natural recreation and tourism, will be permanently marked by warming temperatures and shifting precipitation patterns. And across the state, extreme heat will fuel large and costly wildfires, endanger water resources, drive up energy costs, exacerbate air pollution, and threaten human health. Now, is all of this really worth it because you like the taste of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs? You don't even like the taste. It's the ketchup. It's the gravy. Seriously, are we going to let this happen? You know, if I were governor of California, it would be mandatory veganism right now. Right now. That's the way it should be. So anyway, what else does risky business tell us about what's happening to our state here? Well, it says a dramatic increase in extreme heat across the state, especially in the San Joaquin Valley and inland south regions, will be happening. And it says by the end of this century, summers in California will likely be hotter than summers in Texas and Louisiana today. And the average number of extremely hot days each year, with temperatures above 95 degrees Fahrenheit, again talking my language, will likely double or even triple. By mid-century, the San Joaquin Valley, which accounts for more than half of the state's agricultural output, will likely experience 63 to 85 days over 95 degrees Fahrenheit each year, compared to an average of 44 such days per year over the past 30 years. If my math is right, that's close to doubling that, huh? Can be, up there. By the end of the century, the number of extremely hot days will likely increase to 3 to 4 full months per year. We will continue with this happy news here. Well, the happy news is there is something you can do about it. You can go vegan. You can tell everybody else to go vegan to save California and the world from climate change. That's why we're here. We're here of service. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Up next hour, Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and I don't know, you can listen to us so many ways at the Genesis Communications Network, also on iTunes and Stitcher, and at goveganradio.com. You can click Listen Live. Programs are archived there. You can listen live on the telephone Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. when we are live. That phone number is 605-562-7771, 605-562-7771. We have a call-in number. Well, sometimes we take calls. So that number is 855-660-4261. If my mind goes blank at any time during the show today, I might take a call. I wish my mind would go blank. I wouldn't be thinking of the ramifications that the first quarter of 2015 is the hottest quarter ever recorded in the history of recording quarters. January, February, March, the hottest on record. We're on course for this, for 2015, to be the hottest year on record. And we'll just be nudging out 2014, which currently is the hottest year on record. And we're here every week as the solution to your problem, since nobody else seems to want to save the planet from climate change. Everybody's off, you know, doing the wrong thing, not going vegan, not having everybody they know go vegan. They're off thinking, oh, it'll be we'll have a different energy infrastructure, right? So what planet are you on? A new energy infrastructure would take at least 20 years and $35 trillion. Are you going to get $35 trillion from a climate-denying Congress? So, I mean, you know, great, put up the solar panels, but you know, that's not the solution. You know, miles per gallon, that's not the solution. Turning the faucet off while you're shaving your legs, nope, that doesn't do it either. Even Jerry Brown, the governor of California, says, decline a glass of water when you eat out at a restaurant. Wow, that's, yeah. And then, of course, there's Harris Ranch along Interstate 5 that, you know, uses up so much water, and the only solution to climate change is going vegan. And yes, that means you. Vegans are here to rescue the planet, whether you like it or not, and you might as well like it because the food is so good. It's delicious. There's no sacrifice. You don't sacrifice anything. You don't sacrifice anyone. You're just eating healthier food, more delicious food, and if you don't do it, what's a little extinction among friends? We're looking at the potential risks to the state of California here, where I am, and lots of people are, almost 40 million other people who all really need to go vegan. We're looking at a research study from Risky Business. Before the break, we were talking that climate change now seems to be on track to present us with, that by the end of the century, the number of extremely hot days in California will likely increase to 3 to 4 full months per year. That will really set things out of whack here. We're talking about California going up to 63 to 85 days per year over, well, we're talking this in the San Joaquin Valley, 63 to 85 days over 95 degrees Fahrenheit per year, when over the last 30 years, we've averaged 44 such days. And meanwhile, a likely 60% to 90% decline in the annual average number of days below freezing statewide is expected to reduce snowpack, affecting state water supplies along with winter tourism and recreation. To me, it's a little more important to be able to drink a glass of water than to slide down a mountain of frozen water. So changes in the timing, amount, and type of precipitation in California, which could lead to increased drought and flooding and put the reliability of the state water supply at risk, is a risk that we're facing from climate change, or I should say, consumption of meat, dairy, fish, and egg-induced climate change. We will continue with this discussion after the break on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. You can support the program with a tax-deductible donation. Go to goveganradio.com and click Donate. Thank you. GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and Facebook, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden. And there are also two extraneous Bob Linden Facebook pages hanging out there. waiting for you to befriend me. Well, today we're just looking at, well, I mean, how wrong is it to eat meat, dairy, fish, and eggs? Well, it only causes the end of the world. I mean, that's how wrong it is. We're going over the scenario of what will happen to California. The consequences of climate change is outlined in a study by Risky Business. This in light of the fact that the first quarter of 2015 has been the hottest first quarter ever recorded. And so, warming temperatures will cause California to see a shift in precipitation from snow to rain, as well as a change in the timing of the snowmelt. Most regions in California will likely see a decrease in fall and spring precipitation. The majority of precipitation will continue to fall during the winter, but increasingly more as rain than snow. These changes will impact California's snowpack, which is a major water reservoir for the state, and affect the freshwater supply for multiple industries and communities. California should also expect to see more heavy storms, which could increase the number and severity of floods in parts of the state, and longer dry spells between the storms. The risk of drought could increase as well, especially given more extreme temperatures. Changes in precipitation combined with rising temperatures could also have serious consequences for California's water quality. Widespread losses of coastal property and infrastructure due to sea level rise along the California coast can be expected if we continue on our current path of eating meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. Remember, you know, it's climate change is meat, dairy, fish, and egg consumption induced. If we continue on our current dietary path, between $8 billion and $10 billion of existing property in California will likely be underwater by 2050, with an additional $6 billion to $10 billion at risk during high tide. Did we hear that? If we continue to eat meat, dairy, fish, and eggs, between $8 billion and $10 billion of existing property in California will likely be underwater by 2050. By 2100, $19 billion in coastal property will likely be below sea level, with a 1 in 100 chance of more than $26 billion at risk. In San Francisco, mean sea level will likely rise 0.7 to 1.1 feet by 2050, and 1.8 to 3.3 feet by 2100. Meanwhile, San Diego will likely see sea levels rise 0.8 to 1.2 feet by 2050, and 1.9 to 3.4 feet by 2100. Rising tides could also damage a wide range of infrastructure, including water supply and delivery, energy, and transportation systems. Shifting agricultural patterns and crop yields, with distinct threats to California's varied crop mix of fruits, vegetables, nuts, and other highly valuable commodities, is another risk that I guess you're willing to take if you're going to keep eating hamburgers and ice cream, right? If you're going to have an omelet, you know, if you're going to eat fish. In 2012, California produced one-fifth of the nation's supply of dairy, nearly two-thirds of its fruits and nuts, and over one-third of its vegetables. Is that a good trade-off? If we dump the supply of dairy, is it worth it to dump the fruits and vegetables? Actually, I mean, when you consider the methane from cows, you know, there you have dairy. The major cause of methane. So I don't mind that the nation doesn't get its supply of dairy. Who cares about that? But as a vegan, two-thirds of fruits and nuts and over a third of vegetables for the U.S. at risk? Because my hamburger tastes good. It's not the hamburger, it's the ketchup that tastes good. California's major crops and the so-called livestock and dairy operations face distinct threats from climate-driven temperature variation across the state, which could have major repercussions on local and global markets. Well, fine. I mean, you know, it's just a waste of resources to be growing so-called livestock. If you've listened to this program in the last few weeks, I quoted Scientific American and a study there that says that it can take up to 8,500 gallons of water just to grow the grain for 1 pound of beef. Harris Ranch. I think it's time to shut down Harris Ranch in California. We'll save billions of gallons of water by doing that. Going back to the risky business research here, it says without significant adaptation by farmers, several regions will likely see yield losses for heat-sensitive commodity crops like cotton and corn, with potentially high economic costs. For example, the Inland South region will likely take an economic hit of up to $38 million per year due to cotton yield declines by the end of the century. And climate-driven changes in water availability, quality, and timing could have a significant impact on California's agricultural economy, which is heavily dependent on irrigation. Changing climate conditions are expected to increase the spread of invasive species, some would call them pests, and plant species, and threaten so-called livestock productivity. Increasing electricity demand combined with reduced system capacity leading to higher energy costs is another risk that California faces if its 40 million people continue to go to McDevil's and Murder King and Wendy's and Kills Jr. and, you know, up Chuck E. Cheese and, you know, the true axes of evil. Rising temperatures will likely increase electricity use for residential and commercial cooling, driving up demand across the state. Increasing heat, drought, and wildfires will stress California's electricity infrastructure, decreasing the efficiency of the state's centralized natural gas and nuclear power plants, jeopardizing hydropower generation, and disrupting transmission. All because people eat meat, dairy, fish, and eggs, I might point out, since if you haven't heard me mention it, animal agriculture is responsible for at least 51% of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions. This report from Risky Business says, building new capacity to meet additional electricity demand will result in significant increases in energy costs in some parts of the state. The Inland South region will be the hardest hit, with total energy costs likely to increase by up to 8.4% in the short term and as much as 35% by the end of the century. Higher heat-related mortality, declining labor productivity, and worsened air quality. California will likely see up to 7,700 additional heat-related deaths per year by late century, more than twice the average number of traffic deaths annually in the state today. And with 30% of California's workers in high-risk industries that are vulnerable to high temperatures, labor productivity is likely to decline across the state, most notably in the Sacramento and San Joaquin Valley regions. Higher temperatures and more frequent wildfires will exacerbate ozone and particulate pollution in areas that already suffer from poor air quality, worsening respiratory health problems, and increasing hospitalizations, emergency room visits, and absences from work and school. Ha! It's not funny, is it? It's not funny. It's not funny. This is what we're facing. And I don't know, are we willing to do something about it? Are we willing to go vegan? That's the only solution. The same World Bank climate specialists who tell us that animal agriculture is responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions tell us what else? That we need a population shift. 50 to 85% of the population that currently indulges for no reason, totally unnecessarily indulges in so-called livestock products, that population has to shift to vegan, or it's over. Or, you know, that's it. So, I don't know what to tell you. You think it's a sacrifice? Not really. You know, what kind of world do you want your children to have? You know, it's not like we're asking you to only eat iceberg lettuce. In fact, what I would recommend is just go to the website of Vegetarian House. It's a 100% vegan restaurant in San Jose. I guess it's one of the places that rescues California, as the vegans are here to rescue you from yourself if you don't, you know. I mean, come on, it's time. So what sort of sacrifice might it be? Well, just check out the menu. Go to vegetarianhouse.us. And you'll see this vast menu of international cuisine, all delicious, healthy, GMO-free, organic. And this is what we ask. I mean, fine, I'm not asking you to eat at Vegetarian House every day, but you probably wouldn't mind doing that. Look at how delicious it is. You can also have Vegetarian House cater an event. You have a business event coming up. You have a meeting to talk about climate change, or you have a wedding coming up and you want your kids to live in a world where they can breathe and have food and water. Anyway, check out the website. It's vegetarianhouse.us. We will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Support the program with a tax-deductible donation. Click donate at goveganradio.com. Weekly Sunday afternoon groovin'. We come on the air 5 p.m. Pacific time till 7 o'clock every week. You can click listen live at goveganradio.com. Also, you can listen on the phone. The number is 605-562-7771. Our programs are also archived at goveganradio.com, where you can make a tax-deductible donation. And you can also, of course, hear us on iTunes and Stitcher and your neighbor blasting it away or putting the speakers outside so the people at the barbecue can hear, get the information, you know, that the Sunday barbecue is actually causing climate change and putting us on the road to extinction. And what's strange is Mr. Inconvenient Truth himself, Al Gore, sometimes rumored to be vegan. I don't know. I think there was one mention of it in one article in the Washington Post long ago, but he hasn't actually, you know, come out with, you know, wearing a vegan T-shirt anywhere. I think that it's Al Gore was planning on having meat and dairy, so-called meat and dairy, served at the 2015 Live Earth concert. And Morrissey, who is of the group The Smiths, is appalled, and he actually wrote a letter to Al Gore. I'll talk about that letter after the top of the hour, but Morrissey also wrote this song, which I want you to hear, from The Smiths. It's called Meat is Murder. Bob Linden. Our weekly broadcast heard live 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Sundays. Syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. Broadcasting now for 14 years. As heard on the Air America Radio Network and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations. And programs are archived at goveganradio.com. Prior to the break, we heard music from Morrissey's band, The Smiths. The song was Meat is Murder. And, you know, if you come right down to it, meat and dairy are murder. Not just murdering the animals, but really murdering the planet at this point. Morrissey seems to get it. He wrote a letter that was published in Rolling Stone to Al Gore and the organizer of Live Earth 2015, which is coming up in June, another one of those 24-hour concerts to save the planet, where it looks like Al Gore and the organizers are going to be serving meat and dairy. Anyway, so Morrissey wrote, Dear Mr. Gore and Mr. Wall, who was the co-promoter of the event, I'm writing to ask you to do the one thing that will do the most good for the planet and the majority of its inhabitants. Not serve meat or dairy products at Live Earth 2015. I don't mean offering a vegan option. I mean not serving animal products at all. Otherwise, the event will make no sense. It'll be greenwashing. Serving meat and dairy products at an event to combat climate change is like selling pistols at a gun control rally. Your responsibility is to alert people to a crisis, not sell out to the vendors responsible for it. Not only is it possible for venues to provide a 100% meat-free menu, as is done now at every concert venue in which I perform, including Madison Square Garden, where I have a show at the end of June. It's also a moral duty. Surprised he didn't say where I have a show at the end of June. Tickets available at Ticketmaster. He says, we also know that raising animals for food is a leading cause of climate change. Actually, it's the leading cause of climate change. And that moving toward a vegan diet is necessary to combat climate change's worst effects. There you go, Morrissey telling us that we have to move toward that vegan diet. I would say you can move toward that today. You can be a vegan today. You don't have to wait for any, you know, government policy, weird legislation, corporate, you know, corporations, you know, cooperating. in the war against climate change. So Morrissey says, animal agriculture severely affects the world's freshwater supply and is a major contributor to global greenhouse gas emissions, deforestation, loss of biodiversity, and air and water pollution, among many other harmful effects. Since you can't miss the fact that meat consumption is killing the planet, your own sponsor organization, the United Nations, states this. And since venues can and will cater vegan food for events, if you choose to serve animal flesh at live Earth, you'll be making a mockery of the very concept of the event, in which case it should be renamed Dead Earth, We Contributed. Don't be a denier of the causes of climate change. You know the facts. Make the right choice. Sincerely, Morrissey. So, pretty good definitive statement right there. You would expect me to be saying that, huh? But you get it from Morrissey. Has he gone vegan? I don't know. For years, people have said he's vegetarian and wasn't vegan, but he's certainly talking up the vegan thing right here now, and so hopefully not only Al Gore, but the audience for this event, and I mean, it's about time, huh? I mean, it's just crazy. It's like, you know, eating animals, you know, and their secretions. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, it's sick, right? And, you know, right now, especially eating birds is sick. As, well, the birds actually are very sick, you know. Bird flu, that's not the past tense of a bird flying away. Actually, the birds are not flying away. They are dying away right now in massive numbers, up to about 35 million chickens, turkeys, and ducks have been affected by deadly avian flu viruses in more than a dozen states. I think it's up to 16 states now. Give me a second, I'm scrolling on my computer. So, yes, and deadly at that. If the virus doesn't kill the birds, well, their slave masters will, to try to prevent the spread of bird flu. And quoting the New York Times, quote, while farmers in Asia and elsewhere have had to grapple with avian flu epidemics, no farmers in the United States have ever confronted a health crisis among livestock like this one, which seemed to travel along migratory bird pathways from the Pacific Northwest to the Midwestern states. Almost every day brings confirmation by the Agriculture Department that at least another 100,000 or so birds must be destroyed. Some days the number exceeds several million. End quote. 20% of all eggs consumed in the U.S. come from Iowa, which is the state hardest hit by bird flu. Its governor has declared a state of emergency. Look at how dependent we are on animal slavery and imprisonment and usage and exploitation and killing, that when we can't quite do it the way we're used to doing it, it creates a state of emergency. And in that state of emergency, the state is ordering many mobile incinerators so that they can go around from farm to farm incinerating the birds. More than 40% of the egg-laying hens in Iowa are dead or dying. Let's see what else is going on here. Normally, you know, the birds who are killed by these operations, and they kill them regularly, although now they're faced with killing them all at once. Normally, these birds are ground up and put into pet food, so-called pet food. These ground-up birds, the spent hens, who can't give eggs anymore, who live you know, just for a year of their lives, their tortured lives, because people like to have omelets, huh? More than 40% of its egg-laying hens are dead or dying. Although, you know, if you consider their use in animal agriculture as a whole, that number goes to 100%, right? So, you know, what's so shocking? They're all killed. They're all on death row. How shocking. The birds are dying. Well, 100% of them are killed. No one gets out alive in these exploitation industries. You know, everyone's just upset that they can't profit from exploiting them, right? You know, barns throughout that area routinely imprison up to 500,000 birds stacked to the roof in cages. And close confinement, as we see throughout Iowa, allows for a really rapid transmission of the flu from bird to bird to bird to bird, which can kill 90% of the flock within a couple of days. And 25 million birds have been affected in Iowa. You know, you have to think about this. Like, everybody's all upset. Oh, you know, the birds are getting bird flu and they're dying within 2 days. We're so sad about that. We would like them to have longer, tormented lives, right? So that they can die the way we want them to, you know, so we can gas them and grind them up. It's sad when we can't use them, right? I don't know. It's almost a blessing that they die within 48 hours. Right? Jeez. I don't know if it's a blessing for the male chicks of the industry. They're the ones who they're in and out of this world quickly, and it's over. Ground up alive at birth, or suffocating in bags. Who has it? None of the animals have it good in animal agriculture. There's no humane meat, dairy, fish, or eggs. So 25 million birds have been affected in Iowa. About 250,000 birds affected in California. In Minnesota, over 4 million, almost 2 million in Wisconsin. And thus far, avian flu has been reported in, well, I guess it would be at least 16 states. For some reason, I saw a news report that said there were no reports in Nebraska. And people were asking, like, why? Why is there no bird flu in Nebraska? You know, there are hens there, there are chickens, and now I see the governor of Nebraska has declared a state of emergency, so there you go. Turkeys are being composted in the very barns where they were imprisoned. That's how they're being disposed. You know, this mass murder of the birds and decontamination of the barns will take months. Some of these producers may not recover for years. Some eggs still being secreted by hens are being sold as liquid product after undergoing a federally required extra pasteurization step that, you know, really, that's a confidence builder right there, huh? So they're still allowing the birds with bird flu to be, the eggs to be used for liquid product thanks to an extra step the federal government wants them to do. That's a confidence builder if you eat mayonnaise or ice cream or, you know, bake a cake made with a mix that uses liquid eggs. Anyway, we will continue. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. govegan.com, on Twitter at @GoVeganRadio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. There are also two Bob Linden pages on Facebook, just to confuse you. I invite you to be my friend. And I invite you to check out the products from our friends at Nature's Flavors. There's a Memorial Day sale going on. Go to the website at naturesflavors.com. If you were just grossed out as I was talking about bird flu liquid egg products going into baking mixes, along with mayonnaise and ice cream and all, time to check out the vegan ice creams, right? And the vegan mayo. And all the wonderful baking items that you can find at Nature's Flavors, naturesflavors.com. Nature's Flavors customers like to prepare and bake their own food using only natural and organic ingredients. And they go to Nature's Flavors knowing that their baking products are kosher, vegan, gluten-free, and certified organic. So whether you're a commercial chef preparing meals for many, or a baking enthusiast who likes to create healthy culinary creations for one or more, Nature's Flavors provides quality, great-tasting ingredients for your cooking enjoyment. You can use your creativity and choose from an extensive assortment of baking products, including food colors and toppings and fillings, fruit glazes, flavor compounds, frostings and icings, cookie fillings, vanilla, and even apple dip. Check out all the baking mixes and take advantage of the Memorial Day sale at naturesflavors.com. That's naturesflavors.com, whom we thank so much for support for the radio program and for the World Vegan Summit and Expo, which took place this past March. And, you know, we're looking at what's being sold to us as the next Animal Rights Conference, which is coming up in July, organized every year by the Funny Farm, farmusa.org, once again inviting the animal killers, the butchers of the Humane Society of the United States, to speak at an animal rights conference. I mean, what's going to be in the goodie bag for attendees at the Animal Rights Conference? Maybe one of those dollar-off bacon coupons that's distributed by the Humane Society of the United States? This really very disturbing, deceptive organization. Let me see here. I think I'm going to run out of time, but I wanted to look a little bit at what was on Wayne's blog earlier this week. He was responding to the bird flu situation also. And what did I do? X out of it? I guess I did. Oh, okay. Well, the point that Wayne Pacelli out of the Humane Society of the United States was trying to make was, sadly, what he said was that we need more farms and more agricultural production. And it's really quite confusing to figure out exactly what HSUS is saying, because in his blog this week, which I've X'd out, and I can't multitask and get it on my screen at the same time. So what he was saying this, I don't know why he was bringing up Proposition 2 like it's some sort of success, because Proposition 2 in California has mainly led to the acceptance of the horrible, horrific modified enriched cages, now the humane standard. That's what's happened in California. Yet Pacelli keeps saying that what his organization is pushing are cage-free eggs, which are horrific also. But there's such confusion. I'm confused. Everybody who attends the Animal Rights Conference will be confused. Oh, I don't know. Do we need to work on a second World Vegan Summit and Expo? Ah, that's a lot of work and it's expensive. Anybody interested in helping? Email me if you want to help. Bob@goveganradio.com. We are being sold an animal rights movement by sellouts. Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio and goveganradio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and Bob Linden on Facebook. And maybe it is true that Morrissey has finally gone all the way and gone vegan. I look at my little childhood newspaper, the New York Post, May 1st, says, Madison Square Garden is ditching meat because Morrissey's vegan. That's in the headline, and in the article, it does say that only vegan food will be served during his performance, and it says no meat, dairy, fish. So, all right. Glad to see that the vegetarians of the world can make that transition, which all vegetarians or people who call themselves vegetarian who consume animal products, for all the reasons you went vegetarian, those are the reasons to be vegan, and Morrissey sees it now, and he's telling Al Gore. So there you go. Well, it's time for Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione, the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. The website is abolitionistapproach.com, and very active on Facebook. How are you today, Professor Francione?
Oh, I'm fine, Bob. So Morrissey's gone vegan, you say?
Yes, he's been insisting. You know, Al Gore is holding the Live Earth concert and is reported to be serving meat and dairy at those concerts. And Morrissey wrote a letter to him saying, hey, the concert has to be vegan. He said, my events are vegan. It can be done. The catering at my concerts, and he's using the vegan word now, which I had not seen prior to this, and it's in the headline of the New York Post that Morrissey's vegan, and in the body of the article, it says all the food at his concert has to be vegan, and it specifically says, you know, no dairy, no fish, so presumably that means eggs also, so yeah. After all this time, he seemed to be the longtime vegetarian holdout. Now, is Paul McCartney next?
Well, you know, I used to be a big fan of the Smiths, and I've always been disappointed that Morrissey isn't a vegan, but I've been equally disappointed that he frequently blurts out racist statements. So maybe now that he's vegan, we'll get to work on him to try to get rid of the statements like, you know, that the Chinese are a subspecies, etc., because of the way they treat animals. Really need to get rid of that.
Oh,
you
know,
the relation between human rights and animal rights is very, very close. They're inextricably intertwined. You can't really talk about animal rights without talking about human rights. And they're
all social justice issues. We have a connection.
Well, exactly. So. I mean, all forms of discrimination. You know, speciesism is bad because it's like forms of human discrimination. So we've got a position on forms of human discrimination. So, you know, the idea that the idea that we can look at these as separate issues is just silly. But I wanted to talk tonight about something that actually I've been thinking about for a while, and I'm doing some writing about it now. But it was really, I think, stimulated by the discussion we had last week with the people who organized and participated in the fur shaming, the Kardashian fur shaming event in New York. And one of the things that came out, I don't want to say in that conversation because it wasn't really a conversation, but one of the things that came out in that event was that this idea that people think that the definition of activism. And I think we need to really look at that because, you know, in the 1990s, the welfarists appropriated animal rights. And they said, well, you know, we believe in animal rights, but we believe that we need to use animal welfare reform to get to animal rights. And I pointed out then and continue to point out that the means must be consistent with the end. And if, you know, you say that animals have rights, you cannot promote their humane exploitation as a way of getting to no exploitation. First of all, you'll never get to no exploitation. Secondly, the means that you're employing are in undeniable conflict with the ends you profess to embrace. It's like somebody saying, well, I'm in favor of peace, but I believe we need to use war to get to peace. If someone says, well, I'm a lover of peace. I believe in nonviolence. However, I promote wars to get to peace and nonviolence, you would think that that's a very confused person. Similarly, with the animal issue, if you say you believe in animal rights, you cannot embrace animal welfare. That was that was something I talked a lot about in the 1990s. I'm talking about it still in the 2010s, although we now talk about it in terms of abolition versus regulation. And we have the same sort of thing going on now as we have these folks saying, well, I believe in abolition, but I believe we need to use regulation to get to abolition. But and again, you know, the arguments that they're making, to the extent that they make any arguments other than just raise their voices, the positions they're taking are incoherent. But what I wanted to talk about tonight specifically was this idea that what activism is, because it's really interesting. The welfarists have really appropriated. They're very good at this because, I mean, they control all of these multi-zillion-dollar organizations, and they have PR people, and they have all sorts of of power in terms of getting to people that we mere mortals do not have, who do not have multi-trillion-dollar organizations behind us and PR groups, etc. But I just have
Daisy behind me now.
Yes, I was going to say, Bob, I'm delighted to hear. That's Daisy, right?
That's Daisy. Yeah,
I'm delighted to hear her bark, Bob, because I was with you for 3 days and that dog never barked, and I was really concerned that you had her drugged up or something. She was absolutely so beautifully behaved at the World Vegan Summit. She didn't make a peep, and I thought, you know, what's he got this dog on? Because this dog, this dog is surrounded by hundreds of people. There's all this commotion, all this frenetic activity going on, and this dog is resting comfortably in Bob's arms. What has he given her? However,
love.
at least in her undrugged phases, she barks. So what concerns me is this idea that the large welfare groups have actually convinced their members and people who are influenced by them, and that activism is basically promoting welfare campaigns and promoting single issue campaigns. And anybody who's not doing those things is not an activist. So, you know, Bob Linden doing his radio show and going out and talking to various groups, etc., but having basically the only really vegan radio show that doesn't promote all that welfarist nonsense. You know, I mean, you're the only game in town, and so you've been doing this. You reach a lot of people. You educate a lot of people. Others of us are doing education in various ways, going out, you know, teaching, lecturing, going out talking to people, working with people who are tabling, who are working in their communities, etc. That's not activism because we're not promoting welfare reform and single-issue campaigns. But the activist is the person who does one of three things. Writes a check to one of the large organizations. That's actually the most primary, you know, the most primary form of activism in 2015 as far as the big animal groups are concerned is donating. No, that's activism. And if you want to do something more after you donate, if you want to do something more, but only after you donate, what will allow
even if they have $200 million in the bank and they bring in another $130 million a year, they still
need money to stop animal. They need money to stop animal abuse. And so what we end up with is this sort of the I think, unfortunate. You know, I mean, I'm sure that the folks who were on last week are well-meaning young people, and I'm sure that they care about animals. But boy, talk about a confused group of people who believe that what activism is going into Barnes & Noble and screaming at some Kim Kardashian, you know, who has written a book, and she's doing a book signing, and you go in and you scream and say, "You're the most disgusting person on the planet." That's activism. And, you know, and I'm sure that there were a lot of people, Bob, who saw that and said, "Oh, wow, I'm going to go vegan. That's going to cause me to go vegan." I mean, he just called her the most disgusting person in the world. Why? Of course I should go vegan. And so, you know, it's appalling that anybody thinks that that sort of juvenile and counterproductive behavior is activism. It's not. It's juvenile counterproductive behavior. But, you know, and similarly, you know, this idea that we've got to promote welfare reform, we've got to promote single-issue campaigns. You know, think about this for a second, Bob. You know, I actually, Anna and I are writing a new book on abolition, and we were brainstorming some ideas together today. And one of the things that one of the things that occurred to us was that, you know, the welfareists are always saying, well, their welfare campaigns and their single-issue campaigns are coalition-building campaigns. They build coalitions with people with all different sorts of views. You know, you'll get people who are vegan, you'll get people who are not vegan, you'll get people who are abolitionists, you'll get people who are not abolitionists, you'll get people, et cetera, et cetera. That's exactly right, but that's exactly the problem. When you have a coalition of people, either in a welfare reform coalition or in a single-issue campaign coalition, the only way those campaigns make sense is if they're promoting in a welfare campaign. The only way that welfare campaign makes sense is if you say, we believe that there ought to be a welfare reform, that there ought to be, we ought to phase out gestation crates for pigs. The only way that functions as a coalition-building tactic, and the only way it's coherent, it's understood as saying, but if you eat pork from animals that aren't confined in crates, that's a perfectly acceptable thing to do. Similarly, if you have a foie gras, single-issue campaign focused on foie gras, when you say, well, that's a bad thing to eat, what you're implicitly saying is that stop eating this and eat chicken, beef, you know, pork, a fish, whatever else, but those things are all better than foie gras. And so these campaigns, these welfare campaigns, these single-issue campaigns, they actually promote animal exploitation. They necessarily promote animal exploitation. They would never work to build those coalitions if they didn't promote animal exploitation. So this idea is, in many ways, it's genius what the welfareists have done, what these large groups have done, because they've convinced people that if they want to be, quote, activists, as opposed to doing nothing, you see, what people like you and I do, Bob, that's nothing. The World Vegan Summit was nothing. All of the people, all of the thousands of people that you and I talked to, the educational effort that we engage in.
Time for a break. We'll continue with Professor Gary Francione. Go Vegan Radio with Bob. Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Daisy saying hello. And on Twitter at goveganradio, goveganradio with Bob Linden on Facebook. Thanks for support from SelectT. That's SeeLectTea.com. SelectT.com. You can order online. And yes, plenty of varieties of tea, but also coffee, flavored coffee beans. You have organic roasted coffee beans, organic roasted coffee beans, decaf, and organic flavored coffee beans, organic flavored coffee beans, decaf, organic green coffee beans, plenty of coffee beans, plenty of flavors. The site will keep you busy for quite a while. So many wonderful vegan products from Select Tea. Order online at selecttea.com. And thanks for support for the radio show and for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. So where were we, Professor Francione, when the music came on and we started dancing? And
yes, the where we were about, we were talking about the fact that welfare reform campaigns and single-issue campaigns build coalitions only because they focus on some sort of exploitation and they promote other forms of exploitation. So...
Well, they say only the most egregious, right? That's like what HSUS always says.
Coalition, you know, the only way you build a coalition, a single-issue campaign coalition against fur, is because a lot of the people who are part of that coalition are wearing, as a matter of fact, probably most of them, are wearing wool or leather. So, obviously, if the message of the campaign is, don't wear fur, but all these other things are equally as bad as fur. No, and you know, that's not what's going to be understood by people, because that's not the way you're going to build a coalition involving people who wear leather and wool. So what you end up doing is saying, okay, I'm going to build a coalition, and the way I'm going to do it is by promoting wool and leather. And attacking fur. And that's actually what's been going on. And this idea that, well, you know, we'll do that now and then we'll go after leather and wool. Well, you know, the anti-fur campaign is a perfect example of how that fails. It's been going on now for 40 years, okay?
I've been waiting for the leather and wool and silk.
Exactly, you know? And so this just goes to show these campaigns are not only progressive, they are reactionary, they are welfarist, they are pro-exploitation. And this is what the large groups have convinced a lot of people, including the people that you had on the show last week. They've convinced those people that activism is going and yelling and screaming at somebody and telling them that they're the worst person in the world because they wear fur. I got news for you. There is no difference between Kim Kardashian and any non-vegan. And so the idea that we're promoting wool and leather, or we're promoting the idea that wearing fur is somehow worse than not being a vegan generally, is just nonsense. It's an unclear message, and it's a wrong message, and it completely conflicts with the idea that animals are moral persons to whom we have obligations, and that they are members of the moral community, and they have the right not to be treated as property. It's completely in conflict with that. And so that's what I mean, look, people, activism, those listening, activism is going out there and shifting the paradigm. That's what we need to do. It's hard work. It's not entertainment. It's not running into Barnes & Noble and screaming and yelling while you're taking selfies. It's hard work. It's the hard work of getting out there and educating people and educating them in a creative, nonviolent way about the importance of embracing veganism and rejecting speciesism and the common sense idea that veganism is the only rational response. Most of the people you're talking to, the only people who are going to talk to you are the people who care about animals, right? Everyone else is going to ignore you. The people who care about animals, they already believe that animals matter morally. What we need to do is explain to them that matters morally equals not eating them, wearing them, using them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And next, I want to give you a preview, Bob. Next week, I want to talk about animal charity evaluators, a supposedly objective organization that tells people how they can maximize their contribution to animal organizations. It's complete nonsense. It's a completely welfarist organization. The executive director came out recently promoting Whole Foods. And he's supposed to be objective. So we should talk about that next week.
Let's do that. I thought HSUS got low grades even from them. So,
right. But Mercy for Animals does just fine. Mercy for Animal Exploiters is what we should call them. Okay,
Week,
Bob.
Talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.